Good Shabbat to you all out there. Craig could not be with us tonight because his wife had some testing done. Turns out she's okay, but he had put a lot of hours into it and hadn't slept in a while, so he didn't think he'd be able to make the show. So JB and Kirk and myself we're gonna do the show tonight. How are you today, JB, Kirk?
I'm just fine, thank you. A little tired, but I'm raring to go. So.
Raring to go. Well, you should just take over then.
I misspoke. I lied. I'm enthused. I'm going to go back here. I'm so enthused.
One of the pet peeves I have is the religious notion, you know, that you got to run around forgiving everybody. You know, you bump into a lamppost and you forgive it. You know, I was watching the tail end of a show today where a woman was kidnapped, her and her child, and she was repeatedly psychologically tortured and raped over and over and over again by a madman. And at the end of the show, she just made it clear that she had forgiven him and that it was very important that everybody in her family forgive this guy. I don't see that in the Torah anywhere. Do you guys?
No, he divides everybody up, and everybody gets the just desserts, as far as you can tell. You either die, you're either going to die and never live anymore, and you don't live anymore, period, or you get to be in Sheol, so y'all don't, I can't find y'all doing that. He doesn't think you'll forget.
If you are willing to make a change, you know, if you leave, you turn around, you leave religion, you give up what you're doing that is bad, then there is forgiveness. But until then, God ain't forgiving you. Mm. If God ain't forgiving you, I sure as heck ain't.
No.
Well, you know, I mean, the thing is, forgiveness is above my pay grade anyway. Well, what difference would it make if I forgive somebody or not, unless I was in a position to kill them? And in a position like that, I would kill them. So, I mean, I'm really kind of thrown. You know, Yahusha did talk about if we're to believe, and you know, we can't believe all that much of what they call a New Testament, which is really witness writings. Mm-hmm. And the reason we can't is because they've been so manipulated. And it's just so strange that a foundation to a religious faith is forgiveness for everything, anything and everything. You know, because it's really not a major point. I mean, I think good judgment's in order. You know, somebody, say they accidentally got, there was a car wreck, it was an accident, and someone got killed. I mean, I could understand letting that one go. I mean, as long as it was an accident and they weren't being, you know, totally
like
insane
or something.
But, you know, the concept that somebody's going to knowingly go out and kidnap somebody and take them and repeatedly rape them and psychologically torture them and even threaten them with their daughter's life and this kind of thing, and somehow it equates to being closer to Yahweh that you forgive them. I mean, that's just an insane patchwork of things. I mean, when I look at Cain, as an example, who slew Abel, he wasn't really forgiven.
No, he was allowed to live, but he wasn't forgiven at all.
He wasn't forgiven. Right. And I just think that, they don't really have too much to talk about in Christianity other than good deeds and forgiveness.
Yeah. My mind is racing through all the different things, stories in the Torah where, and Yah just, I mean, he didn't forgive the Egyptians, he didn't forgive the Babylonians, the Assyrians, he didn't forgive anyone who attacks his family, he absolutely doesn't forgive. He doesn't get involved in everybody fighting over in South America or China or whatever back in the old days, but he doesn't, no, he takes it very serious when they attack his family, and he most definitely does not forgive. He
didn't
forgive Sodom and Gomorrah. No, he certainly didn't. But if you turned away, like you said, if you turned away, of course he will. Otherwise, none of us would be here. So
yeah.
But that's a very distinct thing you have to do, as opposed to what purpose does it serve to forgive them? Just so they can
I have no
come
idea.
Get you again?
Above our pay grade.
You feel better or something? I mean, I wouldn't.
I don't understand it. I don't think I'd be very forgiving at all for something like that. And why people go out of their way to, make a public announcement that they've forgiven somebody for something like that is beyond me, because it has nothing to do with the Moed Mikra. It's got nothing to do with being circumcised. It's got nothing to do with walking away from Babylon. In fact, it seems to be kind of a politically correct Babylonian precept to forgive everything.
Mm-hmm.
And if Yahusha did say forgive 7 times 7 or whatever, he was talking about your brothers, and I don't think your brothers would be out doing this sort of thing.
No. Did he forgive Judas?
No. Oh, no. Yeah, so, I just don't see it. I mean, it's just a another precept that has been drilled into people's heads.
Let ye be judged. They don't give the information of it at all.
So let's talk about a minute. What is the stranglehold that these things have on the Christian world? I mean, why are they so forgiving? I mean, why do they forgive Islam so easily?
I think that the forgiveness, I think the reason that it's pushed is I believe the people that developed the religion had a lot to be forgiven for, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think they knew everything they were doing was, a sleight of hand and underhanded, mm-hmm. and used to enrich themselves and empower themselves. And I think the idea of pushing that is that they'll be forgiven. Oh.
So when they get caught, they remind you that, you're supposed to forgive me?
That's what I think. I think, it serves them. That's
the pastors who get caught in affairs. But then you add to that the fact that it's tolerance. And Satan's all about tolerance, as long as it's not tolerating what Yahweh want.
Mm-hmm.
Why Christians don't have tolerance. You start talking Torah and tell them they need to observe the Torah, they have no tolerance for that. There's no forgiveness for you at that point. Ungodly.
It's in direct opposition, in Bereshit 12:3. It says, I will voluntarily kneel down in adoration, blessing those who adore and favor you. And this is, of course, speaking to Yisrael. And I will recede from, slight, and diminish those who actually continually curse you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it doesn't sound like he's forgiving them. He said he's going to diminish them and slight them. I just don't see it. It's definitely a nomos.
He says the same thing about in relation to Paul. He says if you don't, you will be important and held in high esteem if you teach the things in the Torah, and if you teach contrary to you, then of course you'll be lowly and diminished and considered inadequate by the kingdom of heaven. So, he's takes it real serious. He didn't. That ain't forgiveness there. So he draws the line in the sand and says, you're either with me or you're against me.
And it's not very forgiving at all. It's you're dead.
Yeah.
You get slighted. You get diminished. And when he's saying slighted or diminished, he's, of course, talking about in the spiritual realm. And that being diminished in the spiritual realm means death. I mean, that's all there is to it.
Mm-hmm.
That consciousness is no longer going to exist. It'll be annihilated. So, another thing I find odd is there are so many people, they want to misquote, mostly New Testament, but they're misquoting even when they use witness writings. Mm-hmm. And they want to sort of physicalize everything they talk about. In other words, they'll talk about, say, if Yahweh says he will bless somebody in terms of something, they'll try to put that on themselves, and that means they're going to get this money blessing.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't see Yahweh overly interested in money. Mm-hmm. And I also see that there are a lot of people, just as an example, let's just choose, say, George Soros or the Pope, Illuminists, who clearly worship Lucifer. That's what they call him, which is Halal Ben Shikar. George Soros wrote a book, in fact, and dedicated it to what he called the first rebel, Lucifer.
Really?
Now, he sure did.
Oh, yeah.
It's right on. Yeah. And interestingly enough, George Soros, as far as this world is doing, as far as this world is concerned, is doing quite well, isn't he? I mean, he's not being slighted. He's got tons of money. He's got
power.
Beautiful homes. He's got power. He ruins others' lives. And, he hasn't been slighted in any way on this earth. In fact, in the worldly system, it occurs to me that some of the most deprived people and people in opposition to Yahweh rise right to the top in the worldly system, don't they? I mean, they're not slighted in the world.
No. And it's very hard to not be... I'm just speculating here, but I think it's very hard to be in the multiple billionaire, multiple millionaire category, hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars, and not be in that same camp where they are absolutely more inclined to be members of the Illuminati, members of the they claim they are. So many times you read these stories, and it is a closed network. I mean, and they kind of make each other. They make the stars, the celebrity stars, and all part. It's kind of like the initiation to get into the group. It's a scary, scary thing when you start reading it.
Yeah, well, I think what bothers me. First of all, I'm sure it bothers all of us that somebody really takes great pleasure in seeing others with pain.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there is no reason for a lot of what they do to go on other than, just to bring pain upon other people. It's as though somehow they feel better, which makes them midgets, by the way. That means that, the only way they can feel bigger about themselves is to have somebody else feel smaller,
mm-hmm.
Which is definitely a character defect, to say the least. And I just find it odd that these people who really are in control of a lot of the financial and military and governmental aspects of the world are just about the worst people that we could ever even dream of. It's hard to imagine how they got into a mindset that hurting others is a good thing.
But
that's where they are.
Yeah, or wiping out large swaths of the population because they've decided we have too many people, and so not enough resources. Who the heck?
Yeah, because they've got some 15th century Italian or something. That was his theory, but he had no idea about the way farming could be done.
Mm-hmm.
If they wanted to feed the world, obviously they could do it. There doesn't have to be anybody wanting for anything.
Well, they say
we have a distribution problem.
Yeah. We have, in California, they say in the middle of California, of course, is the largest food producing part of the United States. And they say, and I think...
San Joaquin Valley.
The San Joaquin Valley. And they... claim that when it's in full production, of course they've cut off a lot of the water even before we had a drought. They say when it's in full production, they could produce they could feed 1.5 billion people a year from that bread basket. I mean, we can produce food.
We got the whole middle of the country that could
produce.
Yeah,
you got all the wheat belt. You got the wheat belt that goes all the way up to Canada as well. So I mean, it's
corn
not,
as well.
Oh yeah.
In Revelation, Yahweh told us about these people, and he said to the messenger permagos. These things relate, he who holds the swift, sharp, double-edged sword, I am aware of the place where you live and the location of Satan's seat of power. And, you know, he's talking specifically to the universal church there.
Mm-hmm.
He's talking to the Catholic Church. And I noticed that the Pope came out this week or last week, and no, it was this week, and got on the global warming bandwagon. In fact, they had a big symposium.
Mm-hmm.
And actual scientists who use actual scientific information were not allowed. In other words, if they were opposed to the concept of man-made global
contradiction.
Yeah, it's just absolutely a bizarre thing. And
eventually
then they
all get together and agree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
no opinions allowed.
Right. It would be like a group of people getting together that were all for, you know, everything to be communistic and politically correct. And just because one was white, one was... Yeah, one was... Yeah, exactly. One was white, one was Chinese or Oriental, and one was black, and one was Mideastern. But they all had the same philosophies. They would call this a table filled with diversity and not one divergent opinion in the bunch, you know. What they call diversity today is not diverse at all. It's called getting in line.
Mm-hmm.
I also noticed that the Vatican said they held the first Islamic prayer service in the Vatican last week.
They've done that before, or they've done these multi-religious things, including Muslims, because I've seen tapes of them back, two popes ago. So they've done a lot more of that stuff than you think.
Well, it occurs that to me that they're merging the two religions together. I'm seeing mm-hmm. more and more of these pictures with the Orthodox. Christian and the Catholic and the Reverend and then the Imam and the Mullah,
okay.
And they're all together smiling. It just looks like Babylon to me
mm-hmm.
every time I see such a picture.
Makes sense. Yeah. They all serve the same master.
Well, certainly.
Yeah.
And I think that they are merging the two together. I really do.
No, I think you're wrong.
I also wonder, you know, because, you know, when we're on social media, like I am, and you are sometimes, Kirk, I know that, you know, I've got about, I don't know, 2,500 people on my wall. And I'll see people posting political things where they want you to go out and vote for the conservative.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, like there is a dime's difference between the two of them. I guess the Republicans are now out there. And don't get me wrong, I used to be a Republican before I walked away from politics in general. But, you know, it's as though the Republicans now own the House and the Senate, but they just can't find freedom all of a sudden. You know, they just can't quite find it. And it's kind of
a...
Yeah. It astounds me because don't we live in a country that's predominantly Christian? Would I be wrong when I said that?
Well, it's influenced, but I don't think they're the church going type that they were in the 50s, 60s, and even in the 70s. But they still cling to it.
They believe it, don't they? I mean,
they're very. Liberalized, I think, in the sense of they're not heavy into one particular doctrine or something. Everything kind of goes now.
Yeah, well, but yet they say that in general they do believe the Bible. I remember when I was
a
young.
Yeah, they believe in God and afterlife. Yeah.
Yeah. What's interesting to me is that Yael Cannon's you know, what he pinned over there, which is Yahusha's predictions, they claim to believe it. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, these very people are acting as though they could vote their way out of this matrix.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that's an absurd notion, I think.
Yeah, it is. you're going to use the implement that the people who designed the matrix gave you in order to subvert the matrix. I don't see how that happens. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, let's say you were running for president and you were the guy and you really had your stuff together and you recognized how evil everything was and how we got into these wars and we need to pull out. How long do you think you could survive in Washington? They'd kill you. You wouldn't last 2 or 3 weeks. They'd shut you up. They'd find something about you. They would blackmail you. I mean, this is how they do it. I mean, you will do what you're told, or they will threaten you, and they have the power to do that. You can't operate independently. There's no unilateral thinking in Washington. I mean,
yeah,
you do,
well,
they,
you know,
they push you like a bug.
Yeah, exactly. When I see some of these votes, the only question I really have at the end of it all is, were they blackmailed or threatened?
Mm-hmm. Or both.
Or bribed. I mean, there's like three options there. Yeah, I mean, there's three options. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of bribery that goes on. I mean, if that weren't true, you couldn't go into that, take a position in there and just be Joe Average, you know, with 20,000 or 30,000 in your bank account or something, and come out 20 years later with millions, while you're living in two different places and owning several different homes. I mean, but that's pretty much how it works. So it's pretty much out in the out the open now.
Mm-hmm. I had a friend who was running for Congress, and I asked her, "Now wait a minute, I know you, and you are." Wealthy, I mean really wealthy, law practice making millions. And I asked this person, I said, "Well, why are you going to take a job that pays $200,000? You spend that much on lunch." Not really, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know, I hear you.
She says,
yeah.
"No, I'll come out. I'll make millions being a congressperson."
You're straight up, huh?
Yeah, well, it wasn't like I'm going to be bribed, but she said, there are things like you can write a book. Let's say you have a union. And you're a Democrat, and you're very high into the, really close to the union. They could, there's so much soft money. They could come to you and say, "Okay, you write your book, and I'll buy 2 million of them and distribute one to everybody." And they think, "I don't care whether they throw the book away or not. This is just my way of giving you a $2 royalty on your book or whatever," and that's legal.
I mean, yeah, kind of like Hillary Clinton did when she wrote her book. Sure.
Well, all of them write a book. And in fact, the person even told me about that. Well, one thing is you can write a book, and she didn't elaborate, but I mean, it's pretty easy to see how you do it. Somebody pays for the book, and you get the royalty or you get the money. And, it's all soft money. It's not reportable in the sense, it's reportable as income, but it's not reportable in the sense of. And then now they just give speeches. They can give you $3 million for a speech. They pay you afterwards.
Yeah, it's completely bizarre. It's completely bizarre. How these people, they go in there and Bill Clinton, the whole time he was in, talked about, you know, how broke he was all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, now he's worth a couple $100 million, which is very odd for a guy that never really held a job in the private sector.
Well, he has several pensions. You know, he gets his governor's pension, he gets his presidential pension. He'd go on for, he wouldn't starve no matter what he did. But $200 million, that's getting really. So somebody's obviously funding. Most of it came from Arabia.
I just think that the vast majority of that, that's what the presidential libraries are all about, too. It's just there's so many ways they have to go about doing it. At this point, they've done nothing but, sold this country down the river.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you know, with that that verse I just read, it pretty much tells you that the U.S. is going to be in a lot of trouble. You know, the United States and the United Nations, neither one, and I guess the U.N. now tells the U.S. what to do, neither one of them will recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel.
No.
Oh, I beg to differ with them.
It's the capital. It's the capital of the world, guys.
That's capital of the universe, probably.
Yeah, it's the universe. That's y'all's favorite place. So hands down. So you want to go attack it? You want to pick on them? I don't think so, but they do. They obviously.
They really do. Speaking of forgiveness. Yahweh had his chosen people destroy a whole number of different other peoples. And he tells us, it's kind of encapsulated, obviously, in their names. Jericho would be one, which is really Yarakchal, meaning of the moon. Another one, Ain Yod, A, that was another one. It means heap of ruins. There were the Gibbon, which conveys the idea of being evil and idolatrous hill.
Yeah.
Then there was the Lachish, and that means invincible individuals.
Uh-huh.
And then there was Chebron.
Uh-huh.
Which means associated to the, with the occult. And then there was Dabar, which is to fear or revere the word. And I think in this case it was fear.
Sure.
And then there was Chatsor, meaning protected enclosed castle. Now, these are people that Yahweh didn't even want in the land. They were so corrupt. I guess even their children. You know, everything was so corrupt that it would
not be beyond hope.
Yeah, they were beyond hope. You know, and it's probably going back to 1400 BCE. And he just, he had them wiped out.
I think the disease metaphor is very appropriate.
Yeah.
You know, some diseases have to be eradicated. You know, sparing someone who has it allows it to continue. The only way to ensure that it doesn't continue is to eliminate it.
Yeah. And he only did it in that area that he called home that he gave to Abraham. And he also, if you recall, he also said that this was going to, that these people were pretty rotten when they were taken, when the Israelites were taken off to, Hebrews were taken off to Egypt. And it was 400 years later when they came back, and by that time they were totally beyond hope. So he only wiped out that area that he claimed. He didn't say, now go all over the place and chase these people. It just, that's my home. That's Abraham. I gave it to Abraham. I'm going to clean it up, and we're going to start fresh. And if he didn't, they never would have made it.
Well, Yada writes in Yada, put yourself in God's place for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you were God and you could slay Muhammad and his 100 most loyal companions in 622 CE, would you, knowing that Islam would ravage the world, terrorizing, killing, and plundering tens of millions, if you could wipe out Hitler and his 10,000 most fervent Nazis in 1938, thus spare 50 million lives, would you? And in 1948, would you eliminate the 100,000 most loyal supporters of Mao, and thus spare 40 million otherwise innocent Chinese men, women, and children?
Mm-hmm.
And, the answer to any of those, if you're rational, would probably be yes, that's what you would do. But yet I've heard people claim that the God of covenant writings is like the God of the Quran. And the fact is that the relationship between nurturing and harsh, moral and immoral passages in Yahweh's words are more than 500 to 1.
Mm-hmm.
but it's reduced by a factor of 25,000 when compared to the Quran, which is less than 1 in 50.
Yeah.
Meaning the books are far more different than they are alike. But that's one of the things, just shooting from the hip, I've heard people do. Well, the God of the Quran, the God of the Old Testament, they're all just the same, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no. Yahweh would have the Islamists destroyed. That's not the same. You know? Allah would advance the Islamists, wouldn't he?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, those are polar opposites. They're in the antithesis of each other. And, you know, I think, you know, over in Shemoth, he says, they should not live in your land, lest they cause you to miss the way to approach me.
Yeah.
And that's why they were wiped off the face of the planet.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't because he was bloodthirsty. It was because if these people had been allowed to live, these would have been the people that would have basically caused everybody to die.
Yeah.
We wouldn't be reading his words today had they been around.
No.
They would have affected everybody.
Yeah. I've read histories of some of the group. They were making sacrifices. They would just take babies, and I don't want to get graphic tonight. They were just killing their own, like sacrifices that were just unbelievable, and screaming, shouting, you know, praises to their little dumb god, you know, just while they're doing it. Now these were sick people. I mean,
yeah,
this wasn't just some innocent farmer sitting out there that didn't agree with you. I mean, these were horrible, horrible people. So, anyway.
You know, Yahweh talks about the signature mark of religion as being a curse. Just flat out, it's a curse. When I say the signature mark of religion, they almost all bow, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
Kneel. Bow, hold their hands.
Bow your heads, close your eyes.
And, and for anybody that's saying Yahweh is anything like these religious deities that run around lording over others, Yahweh goes into a position where he's talking about his name and how important his name is. You know, he says a son highly values and esteems and respects his father, and a servant his master. And if I am a father, where's my honor and esteem? And if I'm a lord, where's my respect? Now, he's not saying he's either to these people, but he's asking them. Says Yahweh of the spiritual regiment, to you, O clerics, who despise my name. Now, that's Malachi 1:6. Now, if you were to go to any religious material, instead of having Yahweh's name, they're going to have Lord or Adonai.
Right.
You know. So, the very people that despised his name then are the very people that apparently despise his name now. And on down in Malachi 1 and 2, he says this. So then, this condition is to you, O clerics. If you do not listen, and if you do not place it on your heart to give great honor and respect to my name, says Yahweh of the spiritual regiment, I will send in among you all a curse. I'll curse you with your kneeling down. And also, I'll bring a curse on her, that's Yisrael, because you all did not place it on your heart. So, you know, he's telling these clerics that, you know, the signature mark of religion is going to serve as their curse, kneeling and bowing down. You know, so if somebody tells me that Yahweh is the same maniac that we find in the Quran, And truthfully, there's another sick God in the Christian material, because he says, you know, love me or I'll send you to hell, which makes him not even likable. You know, I beg to differ with him. And he's not asking anybody to kneel. You know, he's saying that the people that want to disregard my name, okay, I'll curse you with kneeling. Because you want to be under a Lord, don't you? That's how it appears to me. Yeah. Yeah, he let them pick. He let them pick the way they lose. Which is pretty wild.
I wanted to ask you something, Larry, because you've got your finger on the pulse more than most of us, where you're in contact with a lot of Christians where you're debating and so forth. And as we've, in the last, few weeks, have been on the morning show, on the Shattering Myth show, been covering a lot of Paul, questioning Paul. When you talk to people in a debate with these, and you confront them with so many things that Paul did that are so obviously bizarre, and like, I am possessed, where he declares outright, I'm possessed, or I am insane, or I'm perverted, and the Torah made me perverted, and things like that. What do they respond? I mean, how do they respond? To me, these are like dead in the water when you, if you're following Paul, Christianity, and they are synonymous. And you're confronted with, I remember one time years ago when James was talking to Yada, and they were just starting to write, he was just starting to write questioning Paul. And James said, J.B. said, you know, he brought up the thing about the prophecy in Deuteronomy and Devarim about if you make one prophecy and it's wrong, walk away from him or kill him or something, I don't know, but whether you did it with words or otherwise, basically, you know, you're a false prophet, don't listen to him. So how do they deal with it when you and I know there's some fanatical religious people, but for the mainstream of people that just don't know, when they come up with that, what do they respond, how do they respond to you?
They won't answer. I mean, and then on the other side where you just got the maniacs, what they will do is they will tell you you're misquoting, you're twisting the words.
But if you go back to the oldest documents ever, how can you be misquoting? You know, I mean, why does that not resonate? At some point, don't the facts put you into a corner? I mean, any other aspect of life, if you have enough facts and you're forced into a corner by those facts, and you've got to come out and say, okay, this is settled. I can't argue. I can't refute that. Therefore,
there's a fellow about 72 or 3 years old in our group called Leonard. His name's Leonard Kudracki, and he lives over in California, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And Leonard, you know, he joined the Covenant family when he got circumcised and everything, because I was, you know, just putting out notes over and over on Paul.
Mm-hmm.
And he agreed with it. But, you know, he did ask some questions, and as he went through it, he could see very clearly that, you know, this was no BS. This was, you know, just a straight scoop. This is extant material. Take a look at it. You know, those are the words with it. You can look up the words if you want. And so you get people that are honestly looking, but one thing about Leonard, he told me, he'd always kind of question Paul.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was a thoughtful man to begin with. And, you know, I think that that's the main thing that we're always up against, whether somebody's thoughtful or not. I mean, you know, when I take one of the strongest, one of the strongest passages in the Torah, in Devarim, where he says, surely the person who proclaims a message on behalf of a deity, so they're speaking for a deity. And I love the way Yahweh says a deity, because it's not him. He's not a religious deity. Who oversteps their bounds and speak words in my name. And I believe he means his reputation there.
All right, here for now.
Which I have not instructed or directed him to speak, and who speaks in the name of other mighty ones God's, indeed, that prophet shall want to die, or shall wish to die. That means that the people doing these things are not going to get the favor of even dying. They're going to get eternal separation.
Right.
In the worst place you could ever be, with no hope forever. And within 5 minutes, you would probably be insane. That's my guess.
Yeah.
And when he says this, and then we know, people hang on to their holy Bible. Well, really, where does holy come from? Well, that's attached to sun nimbuses.
Mm-hmm.
Halos. Halos, holy. Holy was the most important festival of the Eastern sun god, Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
And in the classical, that's Sankrist. Yada says, he thinks they got Christ from drugged, a medical cake people rubbed on their eyes.
Yeah, they rubbed on their eyes,
Yeah, but I believe that it was from Krishna because, I've got a note that I did on the way they came up with the name at the Council of Nicaea. And what it was they had debated a long time about the names, and because Constantine represented British interests, he backed Hesus, who was the Druid savior. And they took a vote, and it was like 161 to 157. Hesus beat out Krishna by a nose. And, as was the pagan custom, then they just merged the two names, to Hesus Krishna. And that makes sense to me, because the Eastern archways that are in Catholic churches to this day, what they call it the Sankrist.
Really?
Oh, yeah, they do. And I think it was Hesus Krishna, Sankrist in the classical, which became, of course, morphed in the fourth printing of the KJV book named after the sun goddess Biblio, to Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
And, of course, we know that it's just Yahusha. It's Yahweh saves. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
You want to give him a title? It's Masaya.
But he doesn't even need a title. Yahusha is the title. It can be even simpler than that. But regardless, they're both the same as far as, doing the work of Yah. I mean, shoot.
Yeah. And that's very important to me, because I just don't think that Yahweh, that passage is powerful. Now, I want you to think about this. And then, of course, Bible comes from Biblia, which is a Canaanite sun goddess in Phoenicia.
Mm-hmm.
And so you got a sun god festival, holy, from the Eastern sun god Krishna, and you've got Hesus, the Druid savior, but you've got holy being that festival and Biblia coming from the sun goddess. And he just said, if you want to speak names that I didn't speak, especially if you're going to use the names of foreign gods, and then we know that the gospel of grace was God's spell of gratia.
Yeah.
It has always kind of thrown me how people can just walk by that like it means nothing at all.
Well, that's really my everyday question is I get it that it's going to be a small number. I just can't believe when people are confronted with so much stuff they respond so poorly. I mean, it should grab somebody at some point.
This reminds me, I was listening to yesterday's show this morning while I was doing some work around the house, and Glenn was talking about cognitive dissonance and how when he was a Christian, he had this sense of cognitive dissonance over it. But what's funny is I used to think like the biggest problem with Christians was a lack of cognitive dissonance, but it got me thinking, I don't think it's necessarily, I think there's two types. Because I've noticed when I talk with Christians, you get one of two responses. You get the, okay, whatever, and then they just, yeah, they don't want to hear it. They just ignore you and walk away. And those are the people who I think lack cognitive dissonance. The others get angry with you. They get mad. They get defensive. And I think that's because they do have that cognitive dissonance, and they're trying to ignore it. And when you bring it up, you're reminding them of that. And I think that's why you get the people who just get so angry at you whenever you mention it. Because you're kind of reminding them of what they're afraid of, that they're, you know, everything they've been taught is wrong.
Yeah, and everything that they have been taught is wrong. I mean, why do you suppose, and I don't know what verse it is, but it's in the Yirmiyah, where he says in the end, you know, the goyim come up to him and say, surely everything we were taught is entirely worthless. That's the end result. I mean, he's talking about the end right there. Everything they were taught is worthless. I mean, that's stunning, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, it's mind-boggling. You know, and Yahweh tells us in Shemoth again in Names. He says, and this is 23:24. You shall not bow down to their gods, nor serve them, nor observe, celebrate, or attempt to profit from the likes of their practices and customs. Rather, instead, tear them down and demolish them, breaking, crippling, and crushing their sacred memorial stones, pillars, and altars. Wow! So much for political correctness.
Well, you know, Gideon did that, didn't he? He snuck out of that wine press and knocked everything over. He was a little scared to do it in the daytime, but at least he had enough guts to get out there in the nighttime and knock over their things. And
yeah, well, it doesn't say get caught doing it. It says don't do it.
You do a lot more if you don't get caught.
Yeah. Well, I agree.
But think about the one where the Philistines, I think it was the Philistines, they steal the Ark of the Covenant. And they put it in there with all their other little gods in the room, and every time they go in there, all the other gods are knocked over or broken. I mean, that's y'all doing his thing, the set apart spirit.
No, absolutely it is. You sit and you look at these things. You really sit and you look at these things, and they're so obvious. You know, I think that Yada calls it, he says there's like this hand and this finger pointing here and pointing there and pointing here and pointing there. And that's kind of how you come to view it. You know, because what ends up happening is that he guides you towards reality and out of religion. Religion is not really a workable scenario. Not in reality, it's not.
No.
Because, I mean, as an example, it's not just the forgiveness nonsense, but things as small as being commanded. You know, when he really said what he really said was, you know, of your own volition, I would hope that you walk out of Babylon, you know, away from your father's home and all this, when he's talking to Abraham. But you look at the traditional religious material, and what is he saying? I command you to blah, 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 you know, like Abraham was this little wind-up doll, you know, or a puppet on strings or something. Go ahead.
Are people that scared of free will?
Well, apparently they missed the whole concept, because once you understand free will, you understand you're not being commanded to do anything.
Yeah.
What you should be doing is searching for the proper way to respond to what's true. You know, last night, William was over here.
Uh-huh.
He came to the house. He happened to be in town doing some teaching on a particular app to different people that work on elevators in Florida. And he had his associate Charlie with him, and we had a dinner and had a long talk. And, you know, one of the things that we were talking about was the very concepts that people have of, you know, commands.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how does anyone command somebody to respect them? You know, I mean, I guess you could do it if you're the general of the army and you're
No, you can make them fear you. You can make them fear you. You can't command them to respect you. I don't. You can't make me respect you, but I can be afraid of you.
Right.
And,
they often
incorporate
the, or misconstrue the two to be the same.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that brings. Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I looked up the. To that point, I looked up. I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 days ago, or maybe it was 2 weeks ago, I looked up all the words that are translated command from the Hebrew, and none of them mean command. It means words to speak, to set in place, to a precept, a debar, an arrangement of placement of something in order, or to speak carefully amongst the words, and on and on and on and on, and to teach and to instruct.
Yeah, we were also, you know, we were also
there. Yeah.
No, of course it's not. And, you know, we were talking about even the concept of prayer.
Yeah,
you know,
it
really does floor people that, the word that they use for prayer in Daniel, which was really meditate, think about, it wasn't
mm-hmm.
religious veneration,
mm-hmm.
It doesn't exist in the Torah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it just doesn't even exist in the Torah.
Yeah.
You know,
so, worship was another one. We did a whole bunch of those. You know, we did the worship thing and the prayer thing, and they're not there. You have to twist all the words to come up with an English, which, remember, is driven by a king to make everyone bow down and associate him and God as one entity. I'm your representative. God's representative on earth. I'm the king. It's that concept that drives the whole thing, politics and religion marrying. So,
if we're to sit down and look at real concepts, you know, I remember asking Yada, can you break down, over in Daniel, where he was getting on his knees and facing Jerusalem three times a day?
Yeah.
And I said, can you give me your word for word breakdown on that as close as you can come? And he did, but he did it, and he says, I want you to think about this, right? He says, did Yahweh tell him to face Jerusalem?
No.
Did he tell him to get on his knees?
No.
No. You know, and remember, he walked up, and he was at the highest part of his home, and he opened.
Yeah.
He opened the drapes. Yeah, we already know Yahweh's not into showy religious nonsense. I mean, that's the kicker right there.
Yeah.
And so what he was doing was practicing civil disobedience because mm-hmm. the king was wanting him to get on his knees, which I would guess would be 180 degrees out from where he was looking. Okay. It doesn't say that, but that's my best guess.
Yeah.
And so then it was a couple of weeks later. In Unpopular Truth, we had a couple in there that really good people, but she asked me. She said, "Boy, I wish I could get the right interpretation of where it was where Eliyah, had the logs go on fire, and then all the people fell on their face and began to worship, and they understood that Yahweh was." The real God.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, that's a pretty accurate description there of what happens. But, we have to think about it. I did the same thing that he did with Daniel. And it was like, did Yahweh tell him to worship? Well, no.
No, there's no word for it either. Not the way
right.
you think of it. Yeah.
Right. Well, it said they bowed.
Yeah.
And I said, well, who had trained them? Did they know Yahweh? Well, no. Well, who had trained them? She said, I get it. It's bad.
Yeah, that was just their immediate knee-jerk reaction. So that's what they would do.
Yeah, they had been trained that way. Mm-hmm. You know, I have one of the favorite lines that I have in is a passage in Yashayahu, where it says, "Then Yahweh said, for so much as these people approach me with their mouths and their lip service," talk about religion, mm-hmm. "yet they remove their hearts from me, their yirah," which is fear, "towards me exists because it is taught from man-made traditions learned by rote," which is really reciting a passage over.
Memorized, right.
Now, yirah can mean respect, or yirah can mean fear.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I doubt if Yahweh's saying their respect towards me exists because it's a man-made tradition that isn't true.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty sure he's saying their fear towards me
exists.
And the reason that that's important is because, and that's extant, that's DSS, that's right out of the Dead Sea Scrolls. So that's as old as we're going to see.
As old as we got, yeah.
So that means that the next time you see the Mizmor or Psalm, and it says the beginning of all knowledge is the fear of the Lord, well, we know that that's a lie.
Yeah,
because what it says is Yira. And that means that the respect, the beginning of knowledge would be the respect of Yahweh. Mm-hmm. And how would we respect Yahweh today? Well, we'd pay attention to what he really said and consider it and think about it, wouldn't we?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's no other way to do it. It's why Yahweh says, and this is another reason we don't have any worship to be done in the family covenant. It's one of the many reasons. In Hosea, he says, "And it shall be in that specific day," prophetically declares Yahweh, "you shall encounter me and welcome me as a Yishi."
Mm-hmm.
That's an individual.
Individual, all right.
"And you shall not call me my Lord ever again." Now, if Yahweh was a religious deity, would he want to be welcomed as an individual?
Absolutely not.
No.
He wants to sit in the high place and you bow down to him. That's the way they always are.
It's astounding. I think that those two passages completely destroy many of the aspects of the religious deities known in religion right there. Those two. He doesn't want to be feared. And he wants to be greeted as an individual. And, a religious deity just doesn't do that. They want to be worshipped. And the truth of the matter is, that's what phony religious deities want, because they're invented by men.
Mm-hmm. Although there is Satan, and he does want the same thing, because he gets a kick out of everybody bowing down to him.
Well, yeah, they've worked with Satan. Mm-hmm. They've actually, the people that do these things, like Paul, like Muhammad, right, like Akiva, they all get into
it's their desire too.
They meld with that spirit.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the things we talked about last night. I mean, you can't believe it's an accident that everything good in Islam is halal,
mm-hmm.
and Satan's name is Halal Ben
Shakar.
That's him just rubbing it in.
Well, that was my thought, too. Go ahead, JB. In fact, I've heard Yada say the same thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's just him rubbing it in, how stupid people are. He knows how stupid we are.
Yeah, well, that's why you know that what happened with Chawa and Adam was intentional.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was intentional. Yeah, Yahweh knew full well. Because, Adam and Chawa did not know what we know. Okay? They didn't know what we know.
No.
As far as I know, they might have been smarter than any of us, but I can tell you that Satan was certainly smarter than them.
Yeah.
And Yahweh knew it. So when Yahweh allowed HaSatan, the enemy, Halal Ben Shikar, into the garden, he knew full well that HaSatan was going to try to trick them, didn't he?
Well, they had no experience with liars. So that made them very gullible for, or very open to someone talking. So, gosh, they're unarmed.
Yeah, exactly. And so Yahweh knew what
made things worse. You know, Chawa made things worse. Whether she got it from Adam or not, she was the first to add to Yahweh's word. And that's the worst thing you can do, because that causes so much confusion that you then don't understand what his word is.
Mm-hmm.
Once you start adding to it, you lose sight of it. She added to his word because she didn't understand it. And that's why she failed.
Right, but at the same time, at that time, Chawa and Adam were in an enclosed garden, and you know, to have any other relationship, they had to deal with Yahweh, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
But once they made the choice not to listen to him, they had to go out on their own. Then they had to make a choice to come back to Yahweh, because they were no longer in his presence.
No.
So without choice, and that kind of does away with the whole command issue, without choice, there can be no true relationship. That's exactly why it all happened, because Yahweh wants to be chosen.
Right.
And when Halal ben Shikar, the son of the arrogant morning rising sun, inculcates his names and his title, his name and his titles, into religious material, that tells us why in Zechariah in 13:7, upon the return, why Yahweh says they are burned and blinded by the sun against the Most High Shepherd, against the Most High's mighty man, associated with me, Yahweh of the core helpers, prophetically declares. So he's saying that they're burned and blinded by the sun. Now, do you know when he returns in the battle of Mogi Down, currently called Armageddon? Do you know what time of day that is?
It's probably noon. He may come in the early morning in the evening, of course.
Yeah, it's a twilight when all the Mikra start, because he fulfills all the Mikra himself.
Right.
So they're burned by the sun and blinded. Huh. So I know he's not talking about the literal sun.
Mm.
But he is talking about Halal ben Shikar, because that's his name. And we know that because in Yashayah it says, how you have fallen from above, Halal, son of the rising sun. You are chopped off, disassociated, cast down, broken, smashed, from which you weak to the earth, from which you weakened the Gentiles. Indeed, you will descend to Sheol, into the extreme recesses of the pit. So, you know, the concept, too, that somehow Satan's down there in charge of hell is a bunch of BS, too. He's going to be in the worst recesses of it himself. Mm-hmm. That's going to be quite a fall. So he's not in charge of anything. He's just going to live that miserable existence forever. And I just find it amazing. All these little signs are pointing to what? Sun worship, right? You worship a lord on Sunday. You've got a pagan sun cross. You've got a book called a Holy Bible. You're being saved by the Gospel of Gratia. I don't know how much more a person can look at and not get what's happening here.
Every aspect of the Christian religion is sun god worship.
Right.
It truly is.
Yeah, definitely. It truly is. And that is Halal's favorite guise. It was all throughout history to be Lord Baal. And,
let's go back to Larry's first point. When you really understand that, and when you really know how evil Christianity is, how could you possibly not hate these guys who have destroyed your family, destroyed your parents, your grandparents, your loved ones, by these lies that they trap people into doing and deceive people by? Why would I forgive these people? I hate these people. I hate the
forgiveness for that.
No, I mean, I'm with y'all. Yes, he don't like them either. He's got a place designed for him. Right? This is you don't forgive this stuff.
No, I don't. I mean, you're talking about people's immortal existence.
Yeah.
You know, and why? Well, because they were tricked.
Yeah.
I mean, simple as that. They were tricked.
Sure.
And they're out here pleasing Halal, you know, 24/7. That's how it appears to me. Even at the end of their religious venerations, somebody had asked me, it was a couple of weeks ago, can you show me how this word that was an ancient Hebrew word,
mm-hmm.
Amen. I said, well, it really wasn't pronounced Amen. It was Almain. And, what I did was went to the psalm where he talks about that which is trustworthy and verifiable. And he's talking about the Torah. And you see that word in there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not in capital.
No.
But the way that Amen came about, and if you notice, you'll always see that in a capital letter. Always see Amen in a capital letter.
They've elevated it, no doubt, yeah.
Well, that means it's either a name or a title.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, and it had to be because
we pray.
Amen-Ra, right.
Right. That's the only name it could be associated with. But when in fact, we look at the way the word is actually used, it doesn't, it isn't used in that fashion at all. You know, here's an example. Yahweh's Torah is complete and entirely perfect for returning, restoring the soul. This is one of Craig's, Yada's favorite passages. Mine too. But Yahweh's testimony is trustworthy and reliable, Almain, for making understanding and obtaining wisdom simple and open-minded for the receptive. Now, it didn't say Almain at the end of that verse. That word Almain was used right in the middle of the word. Yet today, people pay homage to the Egyptian sun god, Amun-Ra, simply because they took all seven, you know, it's funny how everything's seven, even there were even seven sets of placeholders. They took seven sets of placeholders out and replaced Yahweh with Lord, Yahusha with Hesus, the Druid Savior, and on and on and on. Kodesh with Holy, of all the horrible things. I mean, that's horrid. And they did add one placeholder after they took seven out, and that was Amen. And if it was added as a placeholder, that means it was either a name or it was a title. And the only name Amen can be associated with is Amun-Ra, the Egyptian sun god, the one that lives in the obelisks, you know, the one in Washington, D.C., the one in the city in London, in Cleopatra's Needle, and they're in...
Right in
the Vatican. Yeah, they actually have two of them there. The most well known is the one in
literally taken down and moved from Egypt to there.
Yeah.
It's not like they built their own. They literally took an Egyptian obelisk and moved it there.
Yeah, to Saint Peter's Basilica. Very interesting, isn't it? Peter. Of course, if you look at the Vulgate, it's Petrus.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Petrus is over there in Jordan. It's kind of a reddish clay it's made out of. It's this stone enclosure that's carved out of the side of a mountain. Mm-hmm. And it was full of what? Well, it was full of
pagan
idols.
Mm-hmm.
So they took Shimon, which means he listens,
mm-hmm.
which was his real name, and they changed it to Petrus. How odd is this?
You got to work hard to do all this, you know. This is hard work to just twist everything Yah says.
Oh, absolutely.
It's so much easier just to look at what Yahweh said and go with that. I find that a very simple thing to do.
Exactly. Now, they're saved by faith. Isn't that true? Right? Isn't that what they say? They're saved by faith. Mm-hmm. You know, faith is from Fides. And that was the Roman goddess of faith and loyalty. So we got another pagan goddess. And what was it Yahweh said about people putting names and words mm-hmm. in his mouth that he didn't speak?
Mm-hmm. And associating with them and on the tablets of stone.
Yeah.
Right out of the chute, don't do this.
Well, you tell me, how many times has somebody called you a sacred namer? I can tell you it's happened 100 times to me. You know where your sacred comes from? That's Latin.
Sacrifice.
Sacrum. It refers to gods or anything in their powers.
Hmm.
A hymn? They sing a hymn in church, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
Right. That comes from Hymenos. He was the Greek god of marriage ceremonies.
Is there anything that's not a pagan god? I mean, come on, really? You can't, give me one. Just give me one to say they missed something. I'd like to know they missed something.
Well, the words that they're throwing out there, I mean, you know, church, we all know what a church is.
Oh, yeah.
That was church. That was the daughter of Helios, the sun god.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, she was a Greek goddess, pronounced Kirk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in Germany, Kirch.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how it became church.
Yeah.
It's a very odd thing. So you go with your Holy Bible into your church, and you praise Amen and sing hymns and talk about how the Greek goddesses of Gratia are going to save you because of your faith. and then, you know, Yahweh's returning. He goes, man, they've been burned and blinded by the sun. And you go, wow. Okay.
And then they have the audacity to say to him, he said, but Lord, Lord, for all the things you did in your name.
Yeah.
I didn't use your name, but, you know, in the name we gave you.
Lord Baal.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's absolutely insane. I mean, it's insane because, not that Halal did this. Of course he was going to try to do it. He's angry. You know, he wants to take as many people down with him as he can.
Oh, yeah.
It's as simple as that.
Sure.
One of the things that strikes me odd, though, you know, you take these people that are involved in the inner circles of continuing this nonsense and advancing the idea of a one-world religion, whether it's several religions merged at once or however it works. I think they're going to just meld Buddhism and Hinduism and Christianity and Islam all into one religion, and they're going to respect every aspect of all these religions.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to be a one-world religion by the time we're done.
But the power is going to be also in the economics. I mean, if they can get you to take a mark and that's the only way you can deal with anything, they got you.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, it's going to be, it's that, and it's militaristic,
so
and it's religious.
One system, and you're done for. You can't get out of that thing now.
It's going to be the ultimate combining of all of it.
You're sure
religion,
this is going to last?
Politics, economics, military, it's all going to be combined into one, and it's all going to be brought against us.
Right.
You sure we're going to last 11 years to true harvest?
Well, I don't know.
I'll trust in y'all. You know,
if it were up to them, probably not. Yeah, you know, if it were up to them, probably not. But I just don't think they're half the gods they think they are. Not even on this planet.
Yeah.
You know, it's also when they finally make their move, think about it. You know, these people that are involved in this, they get their power from, you know, their economic positions.
Yeah.
You know, what they can give or take away from people in that line.
Right.
You know, and when they kill their cash cow, you know, certain amount of them, they're going to be killing themselves right along with everybody else.
Mm-hmm. That's go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, no, and I think that's what slows them down at this point. Mm-hmm. I mean, at this point, they own the oil, they own the water, they own the electric company, they own, you know, they own it all.
Yeah. We're finding that out here in California. They have imposed now, it used to be 20% recently, of deductions in your water usage. And now they've decided, Governor Brown has decided it's got to be 32%. And then a guy from the water company up here in Sacramento came out and he did a study on, he said, if my wife read this, they said, if all the residents of California all reduce their water usage to 32% less than what they're using now, we would save 0.01%, 0.01% of water. That means industry, farming, and government, who are not under the obligation to reduce their water usage, are using all the rest of it. Now, I'm all for the farmers because I think it's stupid to cut off water to save a stupid little fish when people are starving, or when people, farmers, have invested their money in a farm and you turn their water off. You know, that's unbelievably horrible. But come on, I mean, that's they control it. They absolutely control it. So,
yeah, they do. I was wondering where you were coming from. I thought, how do you reduce 32% and you come up with 0.001% or whatever
because
it is?
It's just the residents.
No, you explained that.
Yeah.
I got it. So that means the guy that's with Nestle's that's bottling all the water he's stealing down.
See, that's in Michigan and everything, yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, the difficult part about that is that they're going to run short there, just like they do in any time they cut off your electricity and ask you to stop using so much. Then you stop paying because you're not using as much, and now they have to raise the rates because they can't pay the pensions and they can't pay the people. Then we got water people out here making $600,000 a year. They don't do anything. Not really. They're not, obviously not managing the water well. So why are you paying them $600,000, $400,000, $300,000? I mean, it's a six-figure job just to be part of the little inner circle. And so now they got to raise the taxes because we're not using enough water. So our bills are smaller. I mean, God, what a flawed system. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, you would almost think somebody designed that to put others into a submissive position, wouldn't
you? Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like property taxes. They got you there. You never own anything.
Oh, yeah. I've always said that. You know, there's a lot of... I don't know about you, but I've found that today a preponderance of the people out here realize there's something way wrong.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I think
not
so.
Just with their religion, but that's with their government, what's going on in the world, and all the rest.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's something very wrong. And there's many people that are coming to the realization that we're moving towards the end. Now, they don't know why, you know, and they're not sure when that end is. I mean, we do because we know what the yodel is.
Yeah.
But they don't. But they are all pretty frightened right now.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I mean, if you just watch the news, you can't be that stupid all the time and not realize that we've got wars going on that never stop. We've got disasters to large populated areas that we can't possibly help. I mean, you can't save somebody from a hurricane coming through New Orleans, you know, or earthquakes here and there. So, I mean, some people have heard these prophecies and they have it in the back of their mind, something about that. But, I mean, the earth is just crumbling. Government has taken over so much power. I mean, they're not stupid. They know that. But they choose to kind of bury the head. I think that's the fascination this generation has with these entertainment centers called cell phones. They just bury their heads in it, and like the ostrich in the sand. They just don't want to see it because it's too painful to look at. Then what do you do? If you recognize it, then what do you do?
Well, I mean, I recognize it, and what I did was ran straight towards Yahweh.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the correct response. That is the correct response.
Well, I mean, there's no other answer. Yeah. I mean, you can go ahead. You can become an all-out prepper.
Yeah.
Go prep all you want. Go prep all you want. Save 25 years worth of food if you want to.
Yeah.
I don't think in the end that's really going to matter, because they will probably come to your home and take it.
Well, you remember back, you know, I don't know how you are, but back during the Cuban crisis thing, I remember my father saying, you know, some people were talking about, should we build a bomb shelter? And, you know, I said, well, there's so few of us that would have one, everybody's going to be dead. You know, you got three of them, and how are we going to get out even after they've done it? You know, you got so many years. You can't sit in a hole for umpteen years while the stuff dissipates. So you can't prep your way out of this. I mean, these are big events. If Apollos, or whatever it's called, this Apollo-like name.
Apophis.
When that hits, and if it does hit in the northern Atlantic, that so wipes out America's east coast, which is so vital, and Europe's west coast. The world would have a history. You can't recover from that. Now, the economic system can't recover from that.
You got to remember, that's after a nuclear war, Kirk.
Yeah.
That's after a quarter of the Earth's surface is scorched beyond repair.
Mm-hmm. And then half of the water, or a third of the water, or whatever it is. I forget my sequence, but all these things come like back to back, and you left with a whole bunch of people, like a third of the world population, fighting over the last little vestige of the Middle East, the Chinese
Empire. You're trying to SOL at that point.
Absolutely.
That's kind of how I look at it. You know, I mean, the hope is the Tarua train.
Yeah.
You know, it's the last train out of town, and that's the one we have to be on. And incidentally, you know, I mean, there are people, you know, you hear these debates and arguments. I heard them for years before I understood it. You know, is there a pre-trib rapture? Is there a post-trib rapture? Of course, there is no such thing as a rapture. That was another thing Paul made up.
Yeah.
But he said it was going to happen within his lifetime, by the way.
Yeah, and that's the prophecy that dooms his little crummy soul. You know, he's absolutely a false prophet.
Yeah, because it didn't happen.
It didn't happen, no.
Yeah, and Yahweh tells us, you know, in fact, when it does happen, and he doesn't call it that, it's the Tarua harvest, and
right,
he says
right.
It's so small and so few people, you know, a couple here, a couple there, that the world doesn't even realize it's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So the fanciful books written by the guys, the Left Behind series and the movies and planes falling out of skies and cars going down the road without drivers and so forth, is all a lie.
Yeah, good theater, but that's about it.
Yeah.
You know, good sci-fi film.
and so, you know, when you look at this and people are going to talk, they're going to prep their way out of it, or they're going to fight the beast. You know, I mean, if we're to believe the prophecies in there, that Yahweh, who can stand against him? Well, obviously nobody on earth.
No. Then Yahweh will say, if he doesn't come back and one day late, it's over.
Yeah. That the existence of all humanity would just cease to exist. And so as I look at this and I say, okay, and this is why I asked you guys earlier about, mm-hmm. you know, isn't this a country that portends that it's, you know, it believes the scripture, you know, even the ones they carry, pretty much tells you there's going to be a one world government and it's going to get worse than anybody ever imagined.
Yeah.
Now, most of these people can't imagine that, you know, America or the USA is talked about, this country on the other side, as far west as they knew, further west than that, which would put you out in the ocean. That means straight across, and that means the U.S. and these, you know, they got this giant navy, and they run around telling others what to do, and they're feared and revered all over the planet. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's definitely the United States. There's no doubt about it. It even describes the, you know, the warplanes, Falcons, Eagles. It talks about...
Now you can't debate that prophecy.
No, you really can't.
You cannot debate that. You're dead in the water if you think that's not what that is. I mean, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, and then this is the same country that they say is going to force Israel to give up land. Wasn't that the whole peace process?
Well, we're the only people who do, which is very sickening to me. We're the only people who came up with that idea.
Yeah, but I read that he would slight and diminish anybody. You know, he'd curse anybody mm-hmm. that went ahead and cursed Israel.
Absolutely.
What a curse. You know, you start taking land away from Israel, your country is then under a curse.
Absolutely.
You know, that happened in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and what happened there? Let's see, all their cities were reduced to rubble.
Mm-hmm.
And their country was
and their government that they praise so much is gone, even though they're still a lousy government, in my opinion. But the that whole regime got wiped out, and all the people, and my gosh, thousands and thousands, hundreds of thousands, of millions of people, all got wiped out and incinerated.
Right.
So, yeah.
And isn't that right in lockstep with Yahweh's prophecy?
And you know, because England, you know, England suffered tremendously in World War II. And in my opinion, the reason they did that, they were suffered so much, is also because the Balfour Agreement, when they promised all these things to the Israelites, and then they reneged on it all, you know, they became enemy number one as well. And once again, when that meteorite strikes again, there goes England, and rightfully so. I mean, hate to say it, but rightfully so. I mean, they're hanging in there with us on everything America says and claims to do against Israel. They're always in total harmony with us.
Oh yeah, yeah they are. Well,
curses to all of them. Yeah.
I think England runs the U.S. and that's my opinion. You know,
well, you know, I studied a lot because I grew up in Australia, so I studied. We actually study. The early First World War and Second World War and the politics behind it and the Rhodes Scholarship programs and why they were set up and why Cecil Rhodes built that and the think tanks that they had together. They knew that they could keep the empire going and they made a very conscious effort to join with the powerful millionaires and all in New York and in America. And they formed their allegiances there, and we've always been tied into all that stuff. That is where the One World Order people, Illuminatis, and all come from. And that's not conspiracy theory. That's the history. I mean, these people did. They're not hiding. They if you study some history, you know that's exactly what they said they were going to do, and they do. They wanted to divide.
Well, you know, I mean, it was MI5, I believe, that helped set up the Council on Foreign Relations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after they set up the Federal Reserve Board.
Yeah.
And the first thing the CFR did was buy the 28 leading newspapers, I think, in the United States, and they pretty much controlled
the press.
The press and what people talk about ever since then.
Yeah.
You know, it was like 1928, I believe. You know, and so, you know, when they decided to go out and buy all these newspapers, and they did. And, you know, when you've got MI5 doing this,
mm-hmm.
You know, that's England. That's England
yeah.
doing it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's their agents. Yeah.
I just find it odd. I have mm-hmm. always found it odd that people who profess to believe in their own books, in their own, you know, I don't consider a holy Bible Yahweh's words. I think there are some words mixed in. Some of his words are mixed in with a whole lot of lies, but they would certainly have to believe Revelation. And oddly enough, it's the only scripture in their whole New Testament would be Revelation. And, of course, it's been somewhat butchered, too.
Yeah. But if you really dig deep enough, Larry, if you dig deep enough there, now I have a different, once you know the truth, then you can go back. It was very hard to dig through that big pile trying to find the needle in the haystack. But once you know, once your perspective is set right, and you know what the offer was to Abraham, and you know that's permanent forever, and mm-hmm. will always be, and then you go back and read, and you say, why was I so dumb that I didn't understand it? That's what they didn't even hide that. It's right there. I mean, the preachers hide it when they preach their sermons, but it's, you know, there's a lot of truth in there that you have no excuse for not knowing better. You know, and I realize that there's 300,000 differentiations in the so-called witness writings versus, you know, where the earliest texts, but even that, they're still in there.
Well, and, yeah, well, you can really, I mean, look, you can really consider. That's what I'm. They don't know what you and I know, okay,
no.
And they have no interest in it, from what I can tell. But mm-hmm. I do know that Revelation doesn't, even in their book, doesn't. You know, Yahochanan doesn't paint this, or Yahusha, I should say, doesn't paint this lovely picture of it all coming to a lovely
happy conclusion.
Yeah. I mean, it is a happy conclusion in the very
yes,
end,
for us.
You know.
Yeah. You know, I'm glad it's so happy
for a few people. Yeah, but there's a whole lot of hell talked about before then. You know, that's why he's in there saying, come out of her, my people, so you don't participate in, you know, her her sins and you don't receive her plagues. That's in Revelation. And when he's saying that, obviously, Babylon had been gone for, you know, over 500 years at
mm-hmm.
that point.
No, it's a system. Yeah, absolutely.
You know,
Daniel is prophecies in Daniel, or Daniel, are extremely accurate to find. You find that I always have been taught, always understood, and always read that in Greece, northern Greece, where Alexander came from, that's where the Taurus one would come from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and absolutely, you know, it states that. It tells you it's in the Greek Empire. It's part of the Roman Empire. Well, you know, that's not the Western world where all the preachers would run around saying it's going to be a 10 confederation of Europe, European thing. No, it's not.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it didn't say that.
It's going
that.
To be out of the Greek Empire that became the Roman Empire, the Eastern Empire, and it's going to be, and the tallest one will come from there, and it describes it. I mean, if you're really looking hard enough, it's there. So there's really... I don't want to say there's really no excuse, but you know, it's amazing to me.
No, there really is.
I'm more confused why they left it in.
Yeah, you know, I don't think that they thought anybody really cared one way or another. They were telling them the whole time, "Don't read this, don't look at it," and for the most part, people didn't read it and didn't look at it. You know, the idea that your faith, your fitus, is somehow what's going to save you. You know, that pretty much holds steady for most of them. What I would say to them, though, is if, let's say, you know, you had a particular way to become a student of your painting,
mm-hmm.
and you said, If you go out and you buy these 10 special brushes and you get these specific colors, and let's say there are 7 of them,
okay,
and you apply it to this particular paper, I will be able to show you a technique which will make you one of the most outstanding painters in the world.
I'm sold.
And so some guy comes in and he's got a cardboard box to write on, and he goes and instead of getting these 7 particular brushes, he goes and gets a couple of magic markers,
mm-hmm,
you know, and he puts it up on a tripod and says, let's get started now.
Yeah. It's going to be hard.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty rough, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, and that brings us to people who claim that they follow the Masiya. Isn't that what they do? They claim they follow the Masiya.
No such thing. We talked about that this morning, Scott. Now, you cannot follow. This is not the Masiya you're following. Everything you're quoting is Paul, and that ain't the Masiya. That's not Yahusha.
Right. And that brings us to Malachi, where he's saying, and this is in Malachi 2:5. I'm going to read a couple of things here. And I think that this absolutely destroys Christianity and Rabbinic Judaism right off.
Okay.
My familial covenant relationship exists with him. Life and salvation I gave them to him. Reverently and respectfully, he reveres and respects me on the account of the presence of my name. He is awesome and astonishing. Who is this person? In the presence, on the account of the presence of his name. That kind of destroys the Yeshua idea as
mm-hmm.
well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because Yah has to be in the name. After all, he ran around with Mon Yah, Yah Khan, and then everybody
yeah, yeah.
called himself Yeshua. He made sure to lose the name.
Mm-hmm.
The trustworthy and reliable Torah will exist in his mouth. Wickedness will not be found in his lips. In healing, reconciliation, and in uprightness, he walks with me. And many he reconciles. You know, I've had many of my Jewish friends tell me, nobody can save me. He reconciles. He returns and restores them from sin. He reconciles them. For the lips of the clerics should carefully observe and consider knowledge and understanding. Search the Torah from his mouth, because indeed, he is Yahweh's messenger. Wow. Who could that be?
Well, I know.
Yeah. I'm sure you got to trip over and lose a lot of this, Yahweh's words to believe what the Christians believe and what the rabbinic Jews believe and even what the people calling Yahusha, Yeshua, believe. As for yourselves, now he's talking to these wonderful clerics. In this group of passages, you have turned away from the way, causing many to stumble by your instructions and teachings. And the word he uses there is Torah. So by your Torah,
mm-hmm.
you corrupt and invalidate the familial covenant relationships as Yahweh of the assembled helpful envoys.
I'm always conscious now of how many times you read things and it always talks about the way, you know, the pathway, the mikra, the moed mikra. I mean, it's the same message over and over and over. You cannot miss this stuff once you know it. So you just, it's always Yahweh. It's always Yahweh's in his name. Yahusha is Yahweh, you know, with salvation added. It's the way as the upright pole. I mean, my gosh, how many different ways did y'all have to tell us to say something before we get it? Because every passage you go to, just about, it'll be 4 or 5 things where he's going to incorporate that into the message.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Now, here's what he tells these lovely people, too. He says, now then, I will give you all over to be despised and to be afflicted on behalf of all people. Wow, as relationally you're not observing my way, my Derek, right, Derek,
my way,
and not lifting up my presence,
right,
enough in the Torah.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Now, so Yahweh's presence is in the Torah. Mm-hmm. He's got this messenger who's the Torah, flows from his lips, mm-hmm. and he reconciles many.
So how does a rabbi deal with that?
I'm blown away. You know, I mean, you really have to try to go out of your way to somehow pretend these words are not there when they're clearly there. And we can go to Yashiyah, and he is a diminished part of me on behalf of you, existing as my servant, to stand up for establish, restoring the tribes of Jacob, and to change, restore, and preserve Yisra El. I will give you a gift, and he will provide light to the Gentiles, existing as I am Yahusha to the distant land and earth, world and space, says Yahweh, Redeemer of Yisra El, the set apart one. Wow.
Oh, wow. Double wow.
Now, where does that leave us? I mean, you know, there's a lot of Torah out there. There's a lot of Tanakh. There's a lot of the Torah, the prophets, and the songs. And we sit here, and I can take just these few verses, and you've got to really play stupid, I think, at this point, not to get it. What do you think?
I absolutely agree. I mean, he is a tremendous communicator. He's very straightforward. He doesn't shroud his words with a whole bunch of other stuff. He's very clear. And like you said, anybody's got an open mind. If you remember the quote, I don't know exactly, but anyone with an open mind, you cannot fail to get it.
Yeah, that was the mizmor I was talking about, where they used the word Al-Main. Yahweh's Torah's complete and entirely perfect, mm-hmm. returning and restoring the soul. Yahweh's testimony is trustworthy and reliable, making understanding and obtaining wisdom simple
for the
open-minded.
Right.
And receptive. Okay. Yeah. In other words, I want to receive truth. I'm really trying to think about it. Mm-hmm. My mind's open to it because I don't have a lot of clutter from all these traditions.
Yeah.
You know, and right there, even, you know, Yada points out that, you know, that verse buries every religion.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Because if they differ from the Torah, obviously, Rabbinic Judaism, they're still waiting for a Maaseiah. And if the Maaseiah didn't come when Daniel said he would, that would mean that the Hebrew scriptures were a fantasy farce, right?
Yeah, I remember a rabbi on the radio one time saying that in rabbinical school, he never, Maaseiah never even came up. It's not even an issue with him. I mean, so if you don't have to talk about it, then you don't have to deal with this, I guess. But he said it just wasn't part of the curriculum. They just didn't care. How odd, you know. It wasn't like I always thought they were all waiting, you know, for the different one or something, or the Christians used to say the second coming, you know, that sort of thing. But to him, as he was talking, it just, you know, wasn't even, we didn't give it 15 minutes in the whole 5 years or 4 years or whatever it was.
Yeah, I mean, look at this, you know, right here in Zechariah. So they will look. This is right up, you know, this is when he is arriving. So they will look upon me, whom by association they pierced, the car, mourning as one wails for an only begotten son, grieving bitterly over him as one suffers anguish over a firstborn. Wow. Oh, man. So we got to overlook that too.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that's a result of the two prophets or the two guys that are speaking, the Enoch and Elijah? preaching during that period of time before they kill them? Is that where they're picking it up? Because the world's in a lot of turmoil at that point. I've always wondered, it has to be they turn.
No, that is upon the return. This is Yahweh talking about, you know, they'll look at
me. No, but I mean, they're getting the message. They've gotten the message where they now have considered it, and then they finally come to the realization that it was Yahweh.
Oh, you mean that's where they pick it up?
Yeah,
well, yeah, I think they do. Yeah. I think they make sense. You know, those, you know, Eliyah and Henoch are not there, you know, just to fill time or space in a book. I mean, they have a job to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's my understanding, you know, right, that the world's going to cheer when they finally, you know, kill them. Their bodies are going to lay there.
They're all going to hear the message then. And these are the ones that will finally recognize and say, oh, gosh, what have we done? Where have we been?
No, I mean, exactly. But see, all these things, when they talk about he that reconciles, he talks about my servant. You know, he describes the return in Malachi. You know, in the same way Matanyahu described it. It's almost word for word.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so when people, you know, his servant, his implement, they're looking at me, you know, grieving bitterly over one that they, by association, pierced. I mean, how can people get around this stuff? I don't understand it. It's the same question that I have. I mean, I'm really, for lack of a better word, I'm befuddled that people think that they're going to somehow go out and vote their way out of this one.
Yeah.
You know, by now they should realize that the people who have climbed to the top are exceedingly evil people.
Mm-hmm.
They're not listening to them. They don't care about them. They're using them as debt slaves, basically.
Yeah, it's become a serf. It really has become the lord-serf relationship again. It's just getting worse and worse and worse. They're biting off another chunk of power every time, every year that goes by. It's just amazing. To me.
Well, it's astounding. You know, when I look, let's say I was to take a wall, you know, here, this wall in front of me, and I was just to place on there really news stories that you wouldn't even have thought of 25 or 30 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, say I went through 1 week of the Drudge Report, and I started pasting up all these insane things going on, and these power plays being made, and treaties being written, and, you know, really all in spite of the people that these political actors pretend to represent. I mean, it's in spite of them. It's not for them.
No, no.
You know, you would start out, let's say you start out day one, you start doing this on Monday, and just say you stopped on Shabbat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, say you ran 5 days of this, okay?
Okay.
Well, you'd think you just went through a century.
Yeah. I mean, you know, in the Shudder Myths, the first hour, I just can't believe it just is no end to this horror. You know, I just, and then I don't know if you caught the second hour today when IQ Rosoli, you know, talked about Obama and stuff. You cannot believe it.
No, I didn't catch it. Tell me.
He just went through the things. Well, you know, there's a little tiny debate, not a disagreement so much, but a little tiny debate between Yoda and IQ that I hear in their conversations where IQ just says Obama's a Muslim. And Yoda will say, no, he's really a secular humanism using the Muslims, you know, because he understand, he grew up as a Muslim, or he went to Muslim school and all that sort of thing. But he's really not a Muslim. He's a kind of a blend of secular humanist, Muslim, whatever. And I see both of their points. But when today, and I only caught the half end of it because I had to go and walk the dog and came back. So when he went through his list of these quotes of Obama, I about fell out. And I knew a couple of them, but I just fell out of my chair. And I've got to go back and listen to the rest of it too. It was stunning. I talked to Scott right before we finished off the first hour, and he said, you know, I'm a little worried about it. And I said, listen, the man has written tons of thousands of hours of books and volumes of books and thousands of hours of radio. Just let him talk. Let's see what he has to say. And he said, yep. So and he did, and he just kept on quoting, and I've got to get back and listen to the rest of it, because it builds up in your mind after a while. Though I'm not overly sensitive, but I feel kind of weighted down sometimes when I listen to this horror.
I think everybody's getting to feel that way.
Yeah.
Don't you, JB? I mean, at some point.
I know the end game, and I'm not worried, and it doesn't instill fear in me. I'm just so disappointed. My wife often says, you know, she says, guys, we're just terrible people. And I used to say, well, maybe not when that whole, yeah, we are. She's absolutely right. We're just, God, I can't, we just seem to be, I hate to see just total self-destruction, and that's exactly what we're doing. I mean, just.
So people praise the things that are killing them.
Yeah.
You know, how many people praise Jesus? A couple billion, close to it,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Are they all giving a little service? Some of them
the Jesuits have a lot to do with it. Jesuits are what? I mean, they own 51% of the Bank of America, as an example. It's not like they're powerless. They're the House of Jesus,
really?
Aren't they?
Do they really?
That's fact.
Wow. How'd you dig that out?
I just did some reading. You know, there was a couple of Karen Hudis came out, and she was the lead lawyer for the World Bank.
Yeah,
and she says when an American pays their taxes, 100% of it's moved offshore. Of course, we do that. Federal income taxes do not stay, you know, onshore. I mean, it's a private banking concern. That's what the Federal Reserve
is. Or we're paying off the debts and all that. It's a concern.
Well, you're not paying any debts. You're just
paying interest on the debt, so or something.
Yeah, because they don't print the money to cover the interest, so it can never be paid, no matter who it is. But when let's say I write a $5,000 check every quarter, okay, mm-hmm. and shoot it into the IRS. That money's automatically moved offshore, and she claims 60% goes to the Vatican and 40% goes to an area in London called the City,
the City Guard. I understand
that. That's the Jesuit Banking Center.
Well, I knew it was the Banking Center, yeah. I knew that.
Yeah, well, it's Jesuit ran. Wow. And what they, you know, what that's what she claimed, that's her claim. She was the lead attorney. She's got reams of stuff on it, and I've read in a couple of other places that they do own the majority of Bank of America. Now, that's kind of interesting because, you know, a couple of years back there were between Bank of America and Wells Fargo, they found $373 billion worth of laundered drug money.
Right.
You know, and the standard fee for that, by the way, if you want to clean your money up, is 60%.
They are greedy, aren't they?
Wow. Yeah, 60%. Well, they say they call themselves in the God business. That's guns, oil, and drugs.
Yes,
the God business. No, really, really.
Yeah, no, and, no, I heard that. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, what do you think happened to these people laundering $373 billion in drugs in 1 year?
Oh, they probably slapped them on the wrist and then.
Well, they took a whopping $200 million fine and nobody went to jail. Now, see, on your first billion, you've already made $600 million.
Yeah.
And you pay a $200 million fine on $373 billion. You know, we see who's running things. That's the point.
Yeah.
Whether it's Jesuit or whether it's the House of Orange, or it doesn't matter to me. They're an elite group of people. You know, the Kissingers and the Rockefellers of the world, and all the rest of them, which they're not even that high on the totem pole now compared to you know, some of them out there, like the Savoys and the Liechtensteins and some of those.
Yeah.
And, you know, your Venetian bankers, they all came out of the, what was it, the East Indian Trading Company.
Mm-hmm. The Dutch, yeah.
You know. Yeah, and they've hung on to, you know, that power, of course, for years and years. And they, you know, have a lot to say about the control of the Western world. But, you know, there's more and more and more people seeing these things. You know.
Let me get your take on something kind of pertaining to that. You have these people that are trying to run the show,
mm-hmm.
all involved in this. And then they can pretty much dictate foreign policy. They really can, because you can't.
Well, they pretty much do.
Well, you can't, because, yeah, if you couldn't, you can't get it financed. So if you went against their will, or if you were doing something that was against their will, it would be stopped. How do you reconcile to yourself that if you're trying to control something, that you take the Muslim world and you weaponize it?
Well, I think that the way you do that, you know, I mean, I mean,
why do you get killer's guns that'll turn it on you? Because if they get one atom bomb, and some jerk will try to put it in New York Harbor.
Yeah, well, they probably will.
Yeah. Well, they will, but I mean, but I don't understand how you don't. Then does no one think that through, that you're giving so much?
Well, yeah, and that's always been an astounding thing to me. I mean, you know, everybody out here could. Well, now look at the way Hitler went down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, sure, he was given all these accolades, and sure, he had all this power, and sure, he managed to get 50, or I think closer to 60 million people killed, mm-hmm. and he got his entire country wiped out, didn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, it was just a rubble. You know, he had carpet bombing over there going on for a long time. You know, and it doesn't take a lot of carpet bombing to create a lot of rubble.
Yep.
And in the end, and by the way, the Jesuits call him their favorite son. Did you know that? I mean, it's astounding. Oh yeah. You know, but you know, you look at what all he managed to get done, and get 60 million people killed. And this is kind of an interesting thing.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to kind of put this in. You know, Lisa
sure.
Bonet gets. She gets a lot of these books from, they're not online.
Mm-hmm.
She gets them from different museums and things. Pays a pretty good chunk of money for some of them, by the way. And they,
mm-hmm.
one of the pictures she sent me out of one of them, there's this stone. And Yahweh was talking in the Torah about them, you know, the people ending up buying into a whole lot of the nonsense that was created way over on the other side of the flood. Well, we know that the flood, the Burkle Crater, you know, where that sent all that water going up into mm-hmm. Mesopotamia and so forth.
Yeah, really.
The other side of that would have been India.
Yeah.
And she sent me a picture, and it was a Hindu stone, is what it was. It was on a temple in a Hindu temple. And this one stone on one side was what is called today a Star of David, which, of course, we know Dode had nothing to do with the making of that
yeah.
star.
Uh-huh.
And the other half of the stone was, guess what?
Don't know.
A swastika.
That symbol has been around a long time from Indians.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying, all on one stone.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, I want you to think about this, because that ties right back into halal,
mm-hmm.
saying they're so stupid, they're going to love all these things from me. They're going to praise me. They're going to praise my symbols. They're going to praise my name while I destroy them. And that's how serious this stuff is.
Okay. Wow.
You got a Star of David, you got a Hindu swastika, and they're in the same temple.
Amazing.
It stunned me.
We've hit the two-hour mark, and
okay.
I can hear a storm rolling in, and I got to go take my dog for a walk.
No, I understand. This has been a long day.
I hope that the show wasn't too slow, but I really enjoyed
good
the conversation.
Well, that's
okay.
Right. It's good to talk and just air it out every now and then and see what everybody's thinking about. So I enjoyed it very much. So thank you. Thank you again.
Well, thank you, guys.
Happy Shabbat.
I hope you have a good Shabbat and a great weekend.
Okay.
All
you guys too. Talk to you next week.
See you, JB.
All right. Bye.